Hello and welcome. I am Piers Ridyard, CEO of RDX Works, a core developer of the decentralized finance protocol Radix, a public ledger entirely focused on bringing DeFi into the mainstream. This is our podcast, The DeFi Download, a show about decentralized finance and all things crypto, where we dive into the details of the projects, assets, and services that are powering the DeFi revolution. Today, I am joined by Jazza, founder of DeFi Plaza. DeFi Plaza is a decentralized exchange on Ethereum that is 50 to 65% cheaper to trade on versus things like Uniswap or similar DEXs, and will also be deploying their DEX on Radix. Jazza, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I very much enjoyed the DeFi Download, so proud to be here.
Ah, it's awesome. Right? So you're a listener as well, aren't
definitely,
you?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, amazing. All the makers and shakers are there. So, you know, when you offer it, how could I say no?
Huh? Well, welcome. I mean, like, your history with Radix is a long and storied one. You were there sort of right near the start, right?
Yeah. So I joined actually late 2013. As a moderator on the forum. Back then we had a forum.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was a whole thing, and was very active from the start, basically a daily, to this day, actually. Yeah. So, yeah. And I've done a lot since then. Went over to Dan, helped him with the white paper that, you know, was never published, and then the next version of the white paper that was also never published. Yeah, it's been quite a journey with Radix.
So you went to Stoke, and you spent some time sleeping on his couch, sort of going deep on like Cast and Eevee and stuff like that, right?
Yep, and Tempo after that, right? Tempo after that. Yeah, so really deep. E-money, right? What it was called back then. We drove to the pub in his GTR, which was scary as hell. I don't know if you've had that experience, but
he's never driven me in his GTR. Every time I go and visit him, his GTR is in this like sorrier and sorrier state of not having been driven for a very long time, and he just looks at it like with a sad face. But he has taken me for a drive before, but not in the GTR. I'm not that honored.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a journey, and it's really nice to see where we are right now. It's super impressive what's been achieved, particularly the last years, now that the team has scaled up and that we're really deploying product, production quality code, right? And that's impressive. It's good to see, and I'm super, super happy to see where we're going as well.
Well, I mean, you have been such a great member of the community, and I you know, it has been just amazing to see. Like, I think you're one of these people who's just a calm voice through everything, and as a result, I think that has been recognized. I mean, you're one of the top validators on the Radix network, right? I think you're number three at the moment. What's the total value staked to your node at the moment?
82 million ish XRD. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a lot. It's mind-boggling, right?
Which I think talks to the sort of the trust that the community has in you, and you know, you continue to be an active member on our Telegram. You continue to do things like write the little scripts that keep the community up to date with what's been happening most recently. And like, so yeah, just a huge thank you to all of the things you've been doing there. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been fun. Right.
So on the Radix validator side, if you were going to give anyone a recommendation, right, of how do I get into the validator top spot? What's the secret sauce to the Jazza validator success?
So I never actually made any commercial or advertising for my node. And once the whole distribution of stake started happening, it became clear that I was one of the top nodes. I've been, for the first couple of weeks, actually number one. And that's purely on community reputation, right? So people know me, people know my name, and that's all there was to that. After that, it's now more about establishing a track record of node uptime. Yeah, which is super important, of course, for the rewards and the stability of the network, as well as fees start getting into it, and rewards that are, you know, NFTs or whatever. The OG Swap guys, they have really made some noise with their node as well.
Yep.
So it starts to become a little bit more gimmicky, or I don't know, right? So I'm a simple guy, right? So for me it's super simple. I just offer a low fee and a high uptime and no gimmicks. That's my node, right? And as long as it's one of the top nodes, I won't make any advertisements for it, because you know the network definitely benefits from having good distribution of stake.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, that leads us on nicely to DeFi Plaza as well, sort of low fees and no gimmicks. Like, tell us like about that journey to what made you realize that DeFi Plaza was something that you wanted to build, and like what how does it achieve what it does, which is super impressive.
Yeah, so I've decided actually to build DeFi Plaza somewhere in April. Right about the time that the Uniswap V3 white paper was launched. And it really became clear what would be in Uniswap V3 and what would not be in Uniswap V3. This is after DeFi summer, which was 2020, right? Mm-hmm. And an enormous rise of the popularity of DeFi tokens, liquidity mining, all those things that came up. And the network congestion was mad. Before DeFi summer, we thought that 10 Quay for gas price was super high, right? That means we need to wait. Yeah. And now, 200, 300 in the spring of 21 was perfectly normal, right? Mm-hmm. For as permanent, right? Or the week average. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was absolutely crazy. So then you start thinking like, hey.
And what was that? Just to put it in context of people who don't just automatically go Gwei to dollars. What was that in, what is 200, 230 Gwei in dollars?
Well, so ultimately the cost of an Ethereum transaction in dollars depends on two things. That's the gas cost of the, of three things actually, right? So the gas cost of the transaction itself, and the unit for that is Gwei, right? So we count gas consumption, yeah, of the transaction. Then it's the price per gas that you pay,
right?
And that's the Gwei cost, right? Mm-hmm. And then there is the price of Ethereum in dollars. Mm-hmm. And if you multiply all these three, you get the dollar price. Mm-hmm. So back then, you would get a swap on Ethereum for something in the range of, you know, $50.
Right.
That's what that would translate to.
Which if you're swapping even not that small amount of tokens, you know, one for the other, that ends up really adding up as a fee. And it's not even Uniswap that gets it, right? It's just the network that gets it because of all of this congestion.
Yeah, back then it was the miners.
Right.
Yeah, and in the meantime we've had an update to
EIP 1559.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's burnt, right? But indeed, it's gone, right? It's a cost to the user, which is insane. And therefore, I had also expected Uniswap V3 to have a primary focus to do swapping as cheaply as possible, right? Or as efficient as possible. And when it became clear that that was not the primary focus of Uniswap V3, then I thought, okay, then that leaves a gap in the market, yeah, because I had seen from other exchanges that it was actually possible to swap cheaper than you could do it at Uniswap V2, which was the market leader, and I realized that only in February, March. Yeah, so before that, I thought, okay, Uniswap V2 is so elegant and so clean and so lean and so beautifully coded that, you know, this is what it is, right? And it never even came up to me that that you could do it cheaper than that, but you can, right? So then when the Uniswap V3 thing came out, I sat down and I thought, okay, how cheap is it? You know, what's the theoretical lower limit of what we can do? What's the absolute minimum number of units of gas that you need to make to tokens exchange ownership. Yeah, so you need to move one token into the exchange, mm-hmm. and you need to move a token out of the exchange onto back to the user.
Right.
And then I started looking at what makes up the cost of a transaction. Yeah? So what actually costs gas? Mm-hmm. What is that? And it's surprisingly difficult to find out the fundamental cost of operations. And that, you know, it's strange, but I think that most users, most developers even, are not really aware of what makes up cost. Yeah?
Right.
I'm an engineer by education, electrical engineer, which means that I go down to brass tack, right? I really dig into it and see, figure out what's going on here, and dive deep, and figure out what it's built from and how it works. So as an example, my graduation project at university was to build a control loop for an electrical motor directly on a chip. Yeah, and we used C for that, which is a programming language. And then you compile that, and it becomes machine code that gets run on the chip. And for that application, the important thing is that you want to have each iteration, each control action, as fast as possible, because the faster, the more often you can run that loop in every second, the better your performance will be. So if you really look at what costs time, execution time, in that example, it would be divisions. Divisions are super difficult for a low-level chip. If you really look at the binary operations that are happening, mm-hmm. So a multiplication would be one clock cycle, mm-hmm. an addition would be one clock cycle, mm-hmm. and a division would take 17 clock cycles.
Wow. Right?
So, and that's a massive difference. So my job was basically to rewrite the algorithm such that you saved or eliminated as many as possible of the divisions, right?
Mm.
But just by rewriting, you can play with what actual operations get executed in the opcode. And then in that way, speed it up. Right? So I came with that mindset and approached this same problem. And then I looked at, okay, if you really look at it, you have solidity, but then you compile the solidity and you get the opcode, which gets run by the Ethereum virtual machine. And that's where the actual gas costs happen. Right?
Mm.
So, okay, now how much gas does each operation cost?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to quiz you on this, right? So I'll give you two examples. Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll immediately see where I'm going with this. So adding two variables mm-hmm. costs three gas.
Mm-hmm.
Multiplying two variables costs six gas. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, how much do you think it costs to write one variable to the blockchain?
To
store one variable.
I mean, at least previously, my understanding was it's the same, like storage and operations were the same cost. Because there was this whole debate, and then they moved storage to be more expensive because you have to store it forever. And they were like, well, we're just going to have to make it more expensive. So I know that on Ethereum, it's actually really expensive now to store state. So I'm going to guess that it's 10 times more expensive, 30 gas.
So writing one variable, and variables are 256 bits. 256 bits, that's a lot of bits, right? But still, it's one variable.
Yeah.
5,000 gas.
5,000 gas.
5,000 gas, right?
Super off. Okay, right? Fine.
which is if the variable already exists on the blockchain. Right, so you're overwriting an existing number with a different number. It's 5,000. Right. If it doesn't exist yet, 20,000. Okay. So I was coming in with this mindset. Okay, I'm going to rewrite this algorithm to cut out the divisions. Right.
Right.
Guess what a division costs?
It's probably like, I don't know,
six.
200.
Right. Six again. Right.
Okay. So, six.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shocker for me there, right? So, okay, what's going on here?
Don't write anything until you've solved it.
So, really, it becomes immediately priority to just not write to the blockchain unless you really, really, really have to.
Right.
And the same holds for reading variables from the blockchain. It's a bit cheaper. But still, you're running the first time you access a variable in the hundreds or thousands, depending on where it's located, of gas units, right? So priority number one, don't write to the blockchain. Priority number two, don't read from the blockchain. And then the rest is all, you know, it's nice if you can optimize, but that's where you do it, yeah? So I took, okay, how can I swap tokens with the absolute minimum number of writes? Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a certain number of writes that you have to do because the balances of the tokens have to change. But other than that, you would like to not write anything. Yeah. And if you look at Uniswap V2, then you see that because they have flash loans, they need to do a reserve. They need to keep track of the reserves locally in the contract, as well as the balance that the tokens themselves hold already. Yeah. So, that means that they need to write two extra times to the blockchain. Yeah. Which just costs, 5,000, 10,000 gas. So, just by changing that, you cut out 10,000, and then there's, because we don't use wrapped Ether, we just use Ether straight. So whenever you swap Ether on Uniswap, what actually happens is it wraps it into an ERC-20 compliant token called wrapped Ether, and it that's what it trades on Uniswap itself against the other tokens.
Yeah.
So if you send Ether, it wraps it. And stores it in the pool. And if you go the other way around, it unwraps it and sends you back the Ether, right? So simply by not using wrapped Ether, but just Ether itself, the native token of Ethereum, you save those writes and the reads and writes, and also the external contract calls that are associated with that. So it's just optimization like that. That ultimately led to the 50 to 65% savings in gas costs.
And all of this to no real change to the user experience, right?
It's the same thing, right? So if you want to swap Ether to USDT or USDC, or it's the exact same product. You swap tokens against a certain price with a certain fee. And the concept of DeFi Plaza is, right, so the gas cost is 50 to 65% less. We also have a lower fee. So we charge 0.1% rather than 0.3%, which is, again, a 65%, 66.6, okay, well, saving, two-thirds saving, right, on the fee. And because it's a multi-token, we have all the 16, we have 16 tokens listed on the exchange, and all 16 are in the same smart contract, so there's no router.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, again, saves gas. And because you have these 16 tokens that you can all trade against each other, you create 120 trading pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Where you would need, if you would offer the same trading pairs in Uniswap, you need 120 pairs.
Right.
And here we just have this one massive exchange where all of those tokens are combined.
Yeah.
And what that effectively means is it's a higher capital efficiency because you can trade all the tokens against each other.
Right. I don't have to provide to several pools to
create. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. So if you want to, for example, if you have Ether USDC on Uniswap, and you have USDC to USDT on Uniswap, you could go from ETH to USDT via USDC, right? So you need to hop.
Right.
You would need to hop on DeFi Plaza, which saves you, again, gas as well as another time fee.
But it also means that as a capital provider, if I'm a liquidity provider, I will get more fees because I'm actually providing liquidity to several pairs all at the same time, right?
Well, so what is the metric that we need to track for this is the fee per unit of liquidity provided.
Right. Yeah?
And that means that the important thing is volume.
Right.
We want to have as much volume as possible per unit of liquidity in exchange. And so that's the challenge. And then the question that you can ask yourself, you know, economically, like, what is the optimal amount of liquidity that I need in the exchange for this to be, you know, functioning very well?
Mm.
For example, if you look at Uniswap V2, Ethereum 2 USDC, you would see like maybe 300 million in liquidity, which is an insane amount, right? Mm-hmm. Why would you need that much, right? If you can only justify having that much liquidity in there if you also have an insane amount of volume.
Right.
So with the same 300 million in liquidity, we could split that over 16 tokens, offer all those 120 pairs, and still, for all those 120 pairs, get a far more competitive offer to the end user than Uniswap would get, except for trades larger than $50,000 or something in trade size.
Right. That point, then the gas fees are actually less significant as well. So like
at $50,000 trade size, gas fees no longer matter. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like this perfect system for optimizing for people who want to either to swap smaller amounts, but also it's massively more capital efficient because as a liquidity provider, you're providing liquidity across a large number of pairs.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously, building a DeFi application is not just an engineering problem, right? There's a whole bunch of other stuff that come into it in terms of marketing and community building and getting like integrated into the rest of the DeFi ecosystem, all of this kind of stuff. Like, what have you learned on that journey so far, and where are you on that journey so far?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's I am an engineer, I'm a coder, and I have a nice network in the DeFi space and in the, you know, particularly within Radix, but, you know, a little bit broader than that. But the marketing bit was not my cup of tea, right? I have no idea about marketing. A little bit, because also for Radix, I've been involved in the community marketing side of things, but not as a person who actually engages the influencers, and but what I've learned already from that experience is that it is really difficult to find effective ways of committing your marketing funds. Right, it's really easy to spend funds in marketing, but it's very difficult to spend them effectively. So whenever you create a project, you'll get spammed like to death. With offers for we do promotion for your project on Telegram, and then they would pull in thousands of users into your group, and the game is to generate the illusion of interaction, so they would have a lot of fake users and fake engagement. And then in that way, it's almost like a scam, right?
It is a scam.
And I think it's certainly further across the line than I am comfortable going, right?
I also think that it just on that point, like, there's a really interesting thing in where people often think that marketing is just a money problem, or community building is just a money problem. And what they don't realize is that if you throw money at a problem like that to get community in, and it's just fake numbers, not only does it actually it's temporary, those numbers disappear anyway, it drives out good community.
Exactly.
Because you make it a unpleasant place to be as an actual community member who wants to be involved, who wants to help.
Because 100%. Yeah. So whenever someone engages me on Telegram with, okay, I've got this and this offer, you know, so many investors and I'm bringing you engagement, you know, block, you know, report and spam. It's just, you know, we don't do that. That's not the way. So we want to build a real community with a real sense of involvement and ownership. So, and we've been going that way. It's been a journey. Early on, when crypto still was going up, everything was going up, right? It's a lot easier than right now, I have to say. So early December, when there was a little bit of a tipping point on Bitcoin and Ethereum price, then you see that the micro cap projects, so the really small caps, they start struggling. Yeah? So, and we're one of those. We started struggling as well. So you see the token price is, you know, is suffering a lot, in all honesty, right? And what do you want to do about that? So you can go, this was right about the time that we said, okay, we are ready to engage with influencers, right? So we had a package, or we were preparing a package for an influencer that we thought, okay, this one, you know, is legitimate, really engaging with actual users, and we can add, you know, they can add value to us, and we can add value to them. But yeah, then the market turns, and we're like, okay, do we want to spend advertisement of our, you know, small budget into a declining market? And that's a big question. Is that really effective? What ended up happening is, okay, we said, well, let's first make sure that we have all our ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. So we're currently redesigning a website to make it much more appealing and professional. We started out when we first launched DeFi Plaza. It was a flat text, you know, two columns. That's it, right? It was just like,
who cares about UX UI? It's
absolutely right. So make sure that the smart contracts are solid, and then do a, you know, deploy a good app so that the swapping UX and UI are good. But the landing page was an afterthought, and that's a crime, of course, right? Marketeering.
I mean, curve.finance would tell you differently, but yes, majority of the time.
I mean, they have what, 20 billion or something in liquidity,
and you go to their website, and you're like, are you joking?
I'm very tolerant of you know, 8-bit websites. Which is their thing, right? So you can count the pixels, but I find it super difficult to use. I just don't know where to click. Yeah, and that's crazy for the market leader. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's acceptable, right? But so for our website, we started out with two columns of text. That was not acceptable. We got a lot of, okay, you know, I'm looking into this product, but it looks really shady because this, you know, the website is just flat text, right? And that gives people who don't know you and don't trust you, really raises red flags with them, and right. Rightfully so. Yeah. Right. So we did a first iteration, yeah, with a web designer on our team to really make a step there and improve on the website. But now we got an external professional designer involved as well, and we're really rebuilding the website properly. So that's going on. That's nearly finished. And then we wanted to go after that with the budget that we do have, and commit it to influencer marketing, right? As well as, you know, what have you, Facebook ads or Twitter ads. We're gonna see what kind of a dent we can make in the universe with our tiny little budgets, right? But yeah, that's been the journey.
It is crypto is such a multifaceted area, and it is sort of it's maturing so quickly as well. Like what was acceptable, you know, as a strategy a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, every market cycle, like everything ups the next level. Like this DeFi cycle, like it's been incredible to see how quickly user interface, user experience has been improved. And like,
absolutely.
If you look at things like SushiSwap, if you look at things like Uniswap, if you look at things of like the contenders that are now coming into the market, I do think we are starting to move towards that like consumer friendly experience, or at least an experience that understands that whilst you know everything, as in the project creator knows everything about the project, and of course everything should be simple and straightforward, and why would you not know that you need to click that button? People are starting to understand that, you know, when you're not down the rabbit hole and you arrive on a website, there is a journey you have to take everyone on, and different yeah. people are different journeys, and you have to cater for all of that. So it's really great to see, you know, DeFi Plaza going through that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your new website as well when that comes out. Now, the other thing that you have had some hard, sort of interesting and in some cases hard lessons on has been Solidity.
Right.
So I'd love to, you know, you to talk a little bit about your experience of building with Solidity so far, and then a little bit of contrasting that, because I know you've been playing around with it as well, your sort of experience of building with Scryptr.
Yeah, we've already committed to deploying on Redux, as you said, which is, of course, crypto is the language for that. But this is still Solidity on Ethereum. Mm-hmm. So I had no choice but to work with Solidity and to learn Solidity. And what you hear is Solidity is hard, right? With Solidity, it's easy to make mistakes. It's easy to open up yourself to hacks and those kind of things. And what can I say? It's true. it's true. I'm not going to say awful, but it's you can really feel that it's not designed for what we're using it for, right? So it's built to be super generic. You can do anything and everything with it, and that's immediately also the risk. Because everything is possible. And if you look at tokens aren't really a thing. Tokens are just smart contracts where there's a teeny tiny ledger within the ledger that keeps track of balances. And it's not, you know, whenever you want to engage with a token, you need to engage with that smart contract, which is a crazy design. And it's led to this whenever someone wants to use your token for anything, yeah, you need to approve that. That concept is just super weird.
Right.
Safety perspective, also super leaky, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that blew my mind when Matt, like, really took me through the architecture of a DeFi application on top of using Solidity, was this idea of you have this ledger, right? Ethereum as a ledger could have a concept, and does for the Ethereum token have a concept of what a balance is.
Right.
But it doesn't extend that for anything else. So like you have, as you say, an ERC-20 contract isn't just a contract that tells you what a token is. It also, and it has to define what a token is, what the rules of a token, what transfer, what not transfer. And it actually, ERC-20 isn't even a token standard. It's an interface standard,
yeah,
which is like even more like mind numbing, because you know, you can have a contract calling out to another contract thinking that it's an ERC-20 token, and actually it's not. It just uses the ERC-20 standard, and it does something like pretty like sneaky underneath.
Malicious.
Like
yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, many people have these tokens dropped in their wallets,
right?
That you don't know what is that thing, right? It's right. Got some weird name. You know, don't touch it, because if you engage it, it looks like a token, but if you actually use it, it's going to steal your money, right? So it's possible in Ethereum. It's crazy,
right?
Crazy, and there's so many side effects of Solidity, where if you send Ether to a contract, it calls this kind of backup function, right? That makes all these exposure, these holes in execution logic, because you don't right. you don't program for that, but it happens.
Right.
Then you have reentrancy, which is a very difficult concept to wrap your head around. And also, almost never you design for that. Yeah. So to prevent it, you need to put all kind of extra code in and locks in that it doesn't happen.
Right.
So that's reentrancy, for the people who don't know that. That's when you are within a single transaction and you engage in a contract, and it calls an external contract as part of its execution code. That from whatever happens in that external contract, it might again call your own contract, and you get into this weird loop of execution logic that potentially has devastating effects. And some of the highest profile hacks have that mechanism underlying, right?
So I mean, it was the thing that caused the DAO to fail.
Yeah, for example.
And it's this whole thing about the fact that essentially everything's a message, right? So it's a message and an authorization, and it's not even a good authorization model. It's a very, very, very simple authorization model or permissions model, right? Where we've already got this concept of the alleged doesn't understand what a token is. Instead, you have a contract, and inside the contract is another ledger that is keeping track of all of the wallets. So when a person is looking at their map, talks about this all the time, which is like, where's the token? Where is the token on Ethereum? And if you're looking at a wallet and you've got, oh, I've got a balance of, EXRD, and I've got a balance of Uni, and I've got a balance of DeFi Plaza or whatever, like, you don't actually have that in your wallet. All that is you had to tell the wallet, hey, on this ERC-20 contract, look up my wallet address and tell me what I have the authority to update the balance of on that contract over there, not actually in my wallet on the ledger.
Assuming it's a well-behaved ERC-20 token, right?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, that's how it works. And for a dev, that's a nightmare, right? And what that ultimately resulted into, right? For DeFi Plaza right now, it's DeFi Plaza version 2. And the reason for that is that DeFi Plaza version 1 met an unfortunate end. Yeah, so there was actually a flaw in the execution logic that caused a numerical overflow that ultimately led to an exploit being there that people could take funds that they didn't have the right to take. And that happened on a Sunday afternoon, right? When the first time, it's Corona times, first time in 3 months I wasn't at home. I was visiting someone else, and then that happened. It was crazy, yeah. And luckily, the community rallied behind the project and said, okay, well, this is real. We have a real product. It's just this tiny little one line issue in the code that resulted in these loss of funds. So we fixed that, and we tried again with the support of the community, which has been really strong. And I can't say how surprised I was and happy I was with their support, because it's your soul sinks when that happens with other people's money. Yeah, it's crazy. You feel you've made a mistake and they're never going to forgive me. But support has been really strong, thankfully. Yeah,
that's really awesome. And also a massive kudos to you and your openness with your community, because I think that the degree to which people can be forgiving really does depend on the degree to which people feel like they're with you on a journey. You've clearly done an amazing job of building the community around DeFi Plaza as it being this thing that is not, perfect, but there's a really good opportunity here. And hey, let's see if we can make something of it together.
Yeah. Thank you.
And so, from the point of view of Scripto, like, how's your experience been with Scripto since you started working with it?
So, full disclosure, we haven't actually got a repo with a full test for what we want to do with DeFi Plaza yet. because we've got other plans still on Ethereum before Babylon launches. Yeah, there's it's still a while away.
Yep.
But I've attended the sessions with Russell and the Alexandria preview event, and since I've played also with this crypto code base. And it's just as a developer, it just makes more sense. Right? Logically, when you are programming something, you say, okay, I want to move this from here to there. You just type, okay, take this and put it there, right? And all the security and all everything around that is for free. Yeah? Right. It comes with the architecture because everything is now actually a token. Sounds silly, but it's really like that. So it's still very crude. Yeah, so calling other smart contracts is there's still some things that need to be smoothened before this is production quality user experience for the developers, right?
Yeah, 100%.
But it's all the fundamentals are there. You can really see that the groundwork is very well placed. So it's been a pleasure, basically, to work with.
That's awesome.
And I look forward to actually, we have big plans for DeFi Plaza, where we're no longer limited by gas costs, right? So that means we can do where I've been very stingy on features, we can now actually put features in, not just the swapping, but we can really, you can think about revenue sharing and all kinds of concentrated liquidity, add that, those kind of features and additional staking models, and the sky's the limit. You can build basically whatever you want and in an efficient way.
Well, I mean, it's going to be really exciting to see DeFi Plaza, sort of blooming on Radix as well. And I'm really looking forward to sort of continuing to get your feedback on what you're doing with Scripto to help us improve, the language and everything like that. And just a huge thank you for everything you've done for Radix and huge congratulations on getting to a V2 of DeFi Plaza. I'm really, as I say, really excited about the new interface coming out.
Yeah.
I just wish you all of the best of luck. So if people want to come find out more about DeFi Plaza or get involved in your community, where should they get started?
So there's the Telegram channel, DeFi Plaza. That's where most of the conversation happens. Of course, there's defiplaza.net, which is the website. So just go there, and we have an excellent tutorial section there already. And if you have any experience at all with Uniswap, then it will be super easy because it's the same product, just a lot cheaper. Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, and we have big plans to actually expand it still with a stable coin version and really generate more volume and liquidity in that way, especially in with the market turning down downturn, right? So stable tokens will be the focus in the next couple months, probably.
Nice. So curve, but cheaper.
Yeah. Well, effectively, yeah. Yeah. So okay. We did Uniswap, nice. But cheaper. But now Curve, but cheaper.
Nice. Well,
not cheaper, but as cheap as fundamentally possible, right? So yes. That's then the challenge. Exciting times ahead. And we've got some nice momentum going. We've got some marketing funds, right, to be spent whenever.
Wherever you find a high effective way of deployment.
Yeah, whenever there's a shimmer of light in the at the horizon. And, I'm sure, things will turn around. It's crypto.
For sure.
We've been here for sure. Since 2013.
And these are the good periods to build, right?
Yeah.
These are good periods to build your competitive advantage for the next cycle. So
exactly.
Jazz, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I look forward to talking again when you guys are live on Radix.
Again, thanks for having me. Cheers.